I've confronted hundreds of men over two decades.
I have been in television for 24 years.
I just came to get something to eat.
And I have very seldom been at a loss for words.
Sir, I just came to get something to eat.
Men online looking for children to sexually assault.
What's the motive here? Explain it to me.
No, you're right. It's stupid.
It's an illegal thing.
Yeah, I know. I did a stupid thing.
Men from all walks of life. A doctor, a teacher, a clergyman.
You sent pornographic pictures through the mail. Okay, that's a federal offense right there.
You know I'm in trouble, and I know I'm in trouble.
I tried to get into their heads and understand why.
Each of you have tonight.
I want to know who you are.
I want to know a little bit more about you first.
Now you first?
Sure, go ahead. Let's see if any of this sounds familiar while you enjoy your pizza.
And ultimately, make sure they face justice.
You ask her if she's a virgin.
I ask everybody all kinds of stuff. It's just talk.
You ask her if she's horny.
What's wrong with that?
You ask if she does anal.
It's a question.
Who are they? Have they tried to prey on other children? And where are they now? These are the predators I've caught. I'm Chris Hansen.
The internet, social media, dating, and rideshare apps all make life so convenient and fun.
Swiping to meet up with someone new has become part of our daily lives.
It's also how many unsuspecting people have ended up dead. I'm Courtney Bell.
And I'm Jillian Lee Garner, and we're the co-hosts of the true crime podcast, I Met My Murderer Online.
In each episode, we share a true story of one such deadly online connection and hopefully how you can avoid it. We hear from all who were involved in the case, the investigators.
They discovered a victim inside the house.
Victims' family members.
Right now, it doesn't feel like life can ever be joyful again.
And sometimes, even the murderer themselves.
You have to decide, okay, what are you willing to do here? Are you willing to kill these people?
If you're a fan of true crime, then you have to listen to season 2 of I Met My Murderer Online on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you may have gathered by now, I have very little patience when a predator tries to tell me this is the first time I've ever done anything like this. I was just here to help the girl. I was worried that the boy or girl was in a difficult situation. I'm just here to help. I'm the Good Samaritan. I was just curious. I'd never actually had a sexually charged chat before online. And I'm willing to go out on a limb here and say that 95% of the time, they're lying to me. They've thought about the lie. They understand that there's a percentage, there's a chance that they're walking into a sting operation, that Sheriff Grady Judd's people will be there, Sheriff Chris Swanton's people will be there, I will be there. But they roll the dice. They take that chance because they truly want to fulfill this fantasy of having sex with a child. What about the other 5%? I don't think there's any chance at all that those people are good Samaritans. I just don't. Call me jaded. Accuse me of having a dark view of the world. But I've never ran into somebody who's convinced me yet that they were just a good Samaritan. But I do think there are some in that 5% who maybe did this for the first time. Maybe they have chatted before, they've thought about getting together with a child for sex, they've engaged in sexually explicit conversations. But this could be the first time they actually got in their car, drove to a home where they thought a teenage girl or boy was alone after that sexually charged conversation. Now, I'm not suggesting that they should get a break if it is their first time, but I do believe that there are some individuals, some predators I've caught, who were nabbed early, scared out of their mind, prosecuted even, who were prevented from doing this again. Guys who, had they gotten away with it the first time, would have tried a second, third, fourth time. Multiple victims. And I think Alan Chernay was one of those guys. Alan Chernay was 58 years old in November of 2006 when he showed up at our sting house in Murphy, Texas. Now, I don't have to tell you how controversial the Murphy, Texas sting was. 25 guys showed up, and ultimately, none of them were prosecuted, at least for the acts committed during that particular sting operation. That's the same investigation where Bill Conrad, an assistant district attorney from a neighboring county, surfaced, had sexually charged conversations with two different perverted justice decoys, didn't show up. And when the Murphy Police Department went out to arrest him, suspecting he may be destroying evidence of his illegal chats, his illegal solicitation, he pulled out a handgun and shot himself. He died. Obviously, this was very controversial. The Collin County District Attorney decided not to prosecute any of the other cases. The suicide was a tragedy. We later found out that Conrad had child pornography on his computer, and as a district attorney, assistant district attorney, he knew that he'd be facing in Texas a potential of 10 years in prison for each image. And these images were unquestionably child pornography. We also found out years later that also on his computer was evidence of criminal activity by his boss, the elected district attorney, which helped send that particular district attorney to federal prison. He has since passed as well. So the 25 guys who showed up, who surfaced in the Murphy investigation, initially were arrested. They made their first appearance, but then were not prosecuted. A couple of them got caught later in other investigations and were prosecuted. But the majority, like Alan Chernay, caught a break. They were featured in the Murphy episodes, the Murphy investigation, but they were not criminally prosecuted. They could have been. The cases were there. We had lawyers review them, but they were not. So let's take a look at the case of Alan Chernay. 58 years old, Alan worked in the insurance business. He had been married at the time for 34 years. He's from the New York area, Queens to be exact. And you could tell he was a New Yorker when he walked in. He had a lengthy conversation online with a perverted justice decoy posing as a 14-year-old girl. And there was no doubt, based upon that conversation, as to what Alan's intent was. Now, because the cases were not adjudicated, perverted justice doesn't have the chats posted online. We have some of the chats here, and I'll get into that in a moment. But generally, perverted justice only posts its chats after there has been a conviction. Now, during the course of the investigations, we also had a copy. I don't have personally every copy of every chat ever conducted. Looking back, probably should have kept them. Created my own personal library, but I did not. And so sometimes we rely on perverted justice to go back and get those transcripts that we often use here on the podcast. But we have some of the pertinent chats between Alan and the decoy. Alan's screen name was Alan3204-2000. Not sure the significance of the number, but Alan is Alan Trinet. He lived in Plano, Texas at the time, not far from Murphy, where we were set up. Alan says, "You ever have your nipples sucked on?" Now, he knows this person's 14 or has identified themselves as being 14. "No, not yet," says the decoy. "You ever give head?" Alan inquires. "Nope. I'm boring." Meaning boring. Alan asks, "You want to change that?" The decoy says, "Is it fun?" "Your friends have told you," he says. "They told me about sex." "It's all about sex," says Alan. "Oh," says the decoy. "Would you like to try?" Now, Alan isn't a really skilled groomer here like so many of the other predators I've caught. He's a little bit clumsy. And that's why I say it may have been one of his first forays into the world of trying to co-opt a child into sex. "Would you like to try?" "With you?" she asks. "Maybe. Any interest?" "You got a pick?" "Sorry, no." And then Alan goes on to describe himself. 6'2", 210 pounds, brown hair, hazel eyes. Decoy says, "And you still didn't tell me how old you are." Well, there's a good reason for that. He doesn't want to give it away that he's 58 years old. "You ever give head?" "Nope." Again, she says, "I'm boring." "You want to change that?" "Is it fun?" They go over all this again. Then he says that because he's so tall, quote, "so you can give me a BJ without getting on your knees." That's right. After she says, "Oh, you're tall," he says, "so you can give me a BJ without getting on your knees." This guy is 58 years old. And this is how he's talking to someone he thinks is a 14-year-old girl. So Alan gets in his car, his Toyota Avalon, and he drives to the Sting House in Murphy, Texas.
More about this predator I've caught in a moment.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
He doesn't seem particularly freaked out or scared when he walks in, but that changes when he meets me. Now, Alan is wearing the very definition of dad jeans. I mean, these are beyond dad jeans. They're like grandpa jeans. They're almost up to his armpits. And he's got his long sleeve shirt tucked in. I confront him pretty early in his entrance. He has not reached the bar we have set up. I ask him to have a seat, and then I ask him how he's doing.
Why don't you have a seat right over there, please? How you doing?
Terrible.
Terrible, he says when I ask him how he's doing. Now, during the chat, as I mentioned, he doesn't give his exact age except to say that he's over 40. As if that makes this somehow better. That over 40 is not as bad as 58, which is his actual age.
How old are you?
I'm old.
I ask him straight up, how old are you? He says, I'm old.
He's actually 58 and married. Online, he refuses to say his age except to admit he's over 40. He tells the decoy he would love to get oral sex from her one day.
You drive over to this house. You ring the doorbell. You come inside. Where was this headed?
I'm out of my mind.
I'm out of my mind. Alan strikes me as a guy who is questioning his judgment, his actions. It's now become very real that this fantasy is not going to be fulfilled this particular day in Murphy, Texas. And he knows he's in trouble. He just doesn't know how much trouble he is in.
I just can't believe it.
Well, explain to me. Help me to understand.
I can't.
I can't explain it, he says. Oh, I can explain it. Alan, you had a sexually charged conversation with someone who told you she was 14 years old, and now you're going to come over here and try to get oral sex from her. That's the explanation, Alan.
Because there is no reason that I can't give you any.
There's no reason I can't give you any. Wait, Alan. There's always a reason. Now, I'm trying at this point to engage him in a conversation that might be fruitful, that might lead to him giving me some insight as to why a 58-year-old man would put himself in this situation. A man who had been married 34 years at this particular moment in his life.
I need to leave.
Well, I need to understand what brought you here first.
I can't.
And now he gets up, and it's clear he's going to leave. I can't get in his way or stop him. So off goes Alan, leaving my conversation and walking straight into members of the Murphy, Texas Police Department.
Get on the ground.
Get on the ground.
Get on the ground.
Get on the ground.
On the ground. Face down. All the way down.
Okay, my back hurts. Please.
Alan gets exactly 3.5 steps out of the house before Murphy's finest announce their presence and tell him to get down. He's still treating this like it's an inconvenience, a misunderstanding, a momentary lapse in judgment, like it's all going to be over very soon. Well, not that soon, Alan. You're going to get a break here, but not for any reasons you deserve. And get this. He's not too old to go to a house of a stranger to have sex with a 14-year-old girl, but now he's going to complain that his back hurts when one of the Murphy police officers uses his knee to make sure he's got control of the situation. This wasn't overly rough or anything. They're just trying to handcuff him and arrest him, and he's a little slow getting on the ground. He complains, my back hurts. Oh no, Alan. So sorry, your back hurts. Maybe you should have thought of that before you came all the way over here. I swear. He defends himself, still complaining about his back, asking the officers to be gentle when they put him in the back of the police car, which they are.
Please be gentle on my back. I swear.
Get in.
Oh, thank you,
he says. Well, he's taken away to be questioned by detectives. He sees one of my camera crews as he's being brought into the police department for questioning. We also are able to record the actual interrogation. And at this point, Alan's pretty much denying everything.
Have you ever had sex with underage?
Never, ever.
And he's adamant. Never, ever has he done this before. You know who he reminds me of is the teacher who got caught in Riverside County, California. Never did he meet anybody underage, he told me. Very adamant.
I have no doubt it wouldn't have happened then either.
And then he takes it a step further, saying, I have no doubt nothing would have happened, essentially, at the house where he thought a 14-year-old girl was going to be home alone after he talked all about how much fun they would have if she gave him oral sex.
Why is that? Because I know me.
The detective asks him how he's so certain. Alan says, I know me.
I almost walked out the moment I walked in, although.
But you did walk in.
Yes, I did.
I almost walked out the moment I walked in. Well, why'd you even show up, Alan? He's very adamant, very New Yorker-like. If what you've heard shocks you so far, join us back in a moment. And then the detective asks Alan what he thinks his wife will say about all this. That got Alan's attention. He shakes his head back and forth. Doesn't really say much to that. And then the detective asks how long he's been married.
What do you think your wife's going to say about this? How long have you been married?
34 years.
Oh my God.
34 years. Now, this is where predator logic kicks in with Al. He's going to make the argument, or at least the suggestion, to the detective that because he's been married for 34 years and only got caught doing this once, he should get a break. I don't understand that logic, Alan.
That's why I asked if I could be given any kind of break. That's why I asked.
Wait a minute. Because you're married 34 years, you should be given a break for trying to have sex with a 14-year-old girl. Is that right, Alan? That's the way it sounds. But in the eyes of the Murphy, Texas Police Department, being married 34 years was not enough to get a break. Alan, like the others, was charged with trying to meet a teen for sex, soliciting a teen online for sex, and appeared in court to face those charges.
Please sign the bottom indicating you've been advised of your rights.
Now, this is where Alan got a big break, like some of the other predators caught in the Murphy, Texas sting. The DA, as I mentioned earlier in this episode, declined to prosecute him and the others because of the controversy, I believe, surrounding Lewis William Conrad. Before the investigation, the DA wrote to the police department saying that it didn't want to participate in the investigation, critical that Dateline NBC was involved, calling it show business, but did say that it would take a look at each case and evaluate the case based upon the evidence. And I had a conversation with the DA, Testy, after the investigation. And it was clear that some of these cases could have been prosecuted. He was going to make the point not to prosecute them because of the involvement of Preferred Justice, To Catch a Predator, and ultimately the controversy surrounding Conrad. As you probably know, Conrad's sister filed a lawsuit against NBC, which was settled. So what happened to Alan Chernay? There's no indication that he ever got into any trouble again. This was some 17 and a half years ago. Alan was 58 then. You can do the math as to how old he is now. But I was very curious, and I wanted to talk to Alan. Got a number for him and called. And I'm going to let you listen in on that call because I think it's interesting. Alan is still married to the same woman. In fact, it was that woman, his wife, who picked up the phone. Now, if you listen carefully, you'll hear a man in the background who appears to be Alan.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Is Alan there, please?
Who's calling?
It's Chris Hansen.
And is he are you returning his call?
No, I'm just reaching out to him.
You're reaching out to him?
Yes.
I don't want to reach out to anybody.
Could you give me more information?
I don't want to reach out to anybody. Now, his voice is unmistakably the same voice of the Alan Trenet who surfaced in the investigation. Now, I don't think it clicked right away with his wife that this Chris Hansen calling was the same Chris Hansen who had a discussion with her husband in November of 2006. Alan's about 75 now, but he seems strong a voice in the background.
Yes, Alan and I met several years ago in Murphy, Texas, and I'm a reporter, and I'm following up with him.
Now, I'm trying not to be off-putting here, but I need to obviously be truthful. I'm afraid he can't talk right now. Something tells me Alan hasn't come clean with her in this particular discussion as to why I might be trying to chat with him. He's going to try and make this go away as quickly as possible.
Regarding that meeting.
Hold on just a minute. He met up with you 2 years ago. I'm afraid that he can't talk right now. I'm sorry.
Would you have him give me a call back, please?
What is your number?
Now, Alan's wife didn't do anything wrong here, so I'm not going to make her uncomfortable, more so than she may already be. I did give her my number and asked that she pass it along to her husband to give me a call. As of this recording, Alan has not graced me with a return call. I will let you know if he does.
More of our story in a moment.
As you know, I like to hear from you. And this week's question comes from Steven in New Orleans, Louisiana.
What's going on, Chris? This is Steven from New Orleans, Louisiana. I got two questions for you today. Were there any predators that you caught where you thought to yourself, this seems to be a pretty good guy who just made a mistake and potentially messed their own life up and you in some way felt bad for him? And second, were there any predators that you caught who you couldn't have been more relieved to get off the streets and away from children? Thank you so much for taking your time. Thank you so much for everything that you do. And if you ever make your way down to the bayou, I'd be happy to treat you to some boiled crawfish and a daiquiri and maybe even some beignets. Take care.
That sounds delicious, Steven. Maybe we'll meet at Café du Monde one day for a cup of their dark French coffee and a beignet. They're delicious. We've been working on a documentary, the working title of which is True Detective, about a series of events in Louisiana outside of New Orleans. More on that soon. Anyway, to get to your question, Stephen, are there any predators who I feel sorry for? Well, yes, that's happened. Particularly when it comes to some of the predators who were, for instance, Gulf War veterans who may have been suffering from PTSD. And in the moment, you do feel a little bad for those guys. But then you realize what would happen, very likely, if I wasn't there, my crew wasn't there, law enforcement wasn't there. What would have happened between that adult man and a teenage boy or girl? And I start to feel a little less sorry for them. Are there any guys who I'm very pleased to have off the street because I knew they were a harm to children? Yes, Stephen, all of them, in varying degrees. The guys who've offended before, yes, lock them up. The guy who's been caught just this once, still got to face punishment. It's very individual specific, I understand. Some guys can be given probation and registration as a sex offender and treatment and counseling and probably never offend again. The hardcore heavy hitters, I still believe, they're going to want to offend. And then there are the men who are predisposed, who have the thoughts of offending. And some of them write to me here on the podcast to talk about these things. And I've shared those letters with you here on the podcast. And they know their urges are wrong and they seek help and they don't offend. I don't know what it is in their wiring that makes them want to have sex with somebody who's underage, pedophilia, something in their background, how they're wired. I don't have the answer to it. But I can tell you there are people out there who I believe have those thoughts but don't act on them. And there are many more who are out there, and it's just a matter of time before they become one of the predators I've caught. As always, you can find me all over social media, official Chris Hansen on Instagram, at Chris Hansen on X, have a seat with Chris Hansen on TikTok, Cameo, should you desire to reach out there. And my streaming crime network, True Blue, TRUBLU. Watch TrueBlue.com for details. New Predator Investigations out virtually every week. We call the series Takedown with Chris Hansen. I think there are 60 or more episodes now, more on the way, along with some very compelling documentaries you're going to hear about soon. Watch TrueBlue.com for details, as I mentioned. And as always, you can find me right here at Chris@PredatorPodcast.com. I'll be watching and listening.
A Huda Media Production.